This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the show, everybody. It is episode 200 of the TriDot Podcast. That's right. They've let me do this for 200 episodes, and we're going to keep the podcast rolling. Still plenty of swim, bike, run, strength, recovery, nutrition topics for us to get to here on the TriDot Podcast. Thankfully, when we launched this podcast, triathlon is just such a complicated sport. There is plenty of things for me to ask our coaches and pick their brains about. But here on episode 200, if you're a longtime listener, you know this already, but every 25 episodes, we dedicate the show to asking a panel of our coaches your questions, questions from you, the athletes in our audience. And I've got three TriDot coaches and experts here to help us out here for this episode. Number one, pro triathlete and TriDot coach Elizabeth James. Second, the fitness director at Alamance Country Club and TriDot founding master coach Matt Summer. And exercise physiologist and nutritionist Dr. Krista Austin. I really like this panel. It gives us a professional triathlete that we all know and love, and with Elizabeth. It gives us a fellow podcasting TriDot coach in Matt Summer. And it gives us our favorite source of nutrition information with Dr. Krista Austin. So thanks to all three of you for joining me for episode 200.
200. Oh my goodness. Like already, I guess time flies when you are having fun. It is hard to believe that we are already 200 episodes into this journey. So excited for today.
Congrats on such a great achievement, such a valuable resource that has been developed for athletes. So I'm excited to see it, you know, thriving and look forward to seeing more of it.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back. I'm privileged to be alongside these industry experts with EJ and Dr. Austin. So first of all, thank you for that. And wow, what an accomplishment. As a fellow podcaster myself, that's a huge milestone. We're still in our infancy. We're only 29 deep, and I can't even imagine going to 200, but I'm sure it'll be there before we know
it. Sure will.
Andrew, this is such a valuable vehicle that you're doing here for the TriDot family, providing so much wisdom, guidance, and just another reference. That's why TriDot's the leading triathlon expert out there. So much to offer. What a great thing you're doing here.
I'm Andrew, the Average Triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question. Settle in for our main set conversation, asking our experts your questions, and then wind things down like we always do with Vanessa on the cooldown, getting our coach cooldown tip. Have you planned your nutrition strategy for your next race? If you're in need of some help, our friends at Precision Fuel and Hydration provide education, tools, and products to help you personalize your fueling plan. Precision Fuel and Hydration work with some of the best triathletes in the world, and their products are used by elite athletes at the PTO Tour races. If you've ever wanted to know what pros like Leon Chevalier, Ash Gentle, and Emma Pollant Brown eat and drink to fuel their races, check out the athlete case study section at precisionfuelandhydration.com. And you can refine your own hydration and fueling strategy like the pros too. Use PFNH's free online fuel and hydration planner to get a personalized race nutrition plan, and then book a one-on-one video consultation with their athlete support team to start refining your own strategy. Once your strategy is in place, the Precision Fuel and Hydration product range is designed to make it easier for you to track exactly what you're eating and drinking during races, so you can just concentrate on hitting your numbers. And don't forget, TriDot listeners get 10% off their very first order of electrolytes and fueling products by using the code TRI23 at the checkout.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Today's warm-up question is also an audience question, and it comes from TriDot coach Gina Reimel. Gina asked, what is the hardest triathlon thing that you have had to retire or trash? And yeah, this is a great question. Tri gear and endurance sport gear, it comes and it goes. It serves its purpose as long as it can. And then inevitably we have to retire it or trash it. So I'm curious for each of you on the show today, What was the hardest piece of triathlon gear to move on from? Coach Matt.
This one made me laugh out loud, I'll be honest. This was a no-brainer. I don't know if anybody remembers Fuel Belt. They're not really in business anymore, but I had an original Fuel Belt, and I love that thing. Call it Sentimental Connection. I wore it for my first Ironman I ever did. I wore it for my first marathon I ever did. Great piece of training equipment. The thing's falling apart, holding on by threads. I think the Velcro's wearing off. The caps leak. I think the bottles I put through the dishwasher. I still have it. I still pull it out. I still like to use it. It smells terrible. But I've gone as far as looking on eBay for replacement parts. You just can't find them anymore. There are other belts out there from other vendors. But I tell you, they just don't make equipment like they used to. I love that thing. I still have it, but I'm very strategic about when I use it now.
Now, Dr. Austin, you are not a triathlete per se. You have done some stuff in endurance sports. So I will broaden this for you. I mean, you can really say any piece of athletic gear that was sentimental to you, we'll allow it here. What is this answer for you?
I've given up a lot of, you know, nutrition products over the years to test them out on myself and just be like, how does this sit? How does it taste? You know, things like that. And I've gotten rid of a lot of the products that I kind of keep in my slush drawer, I guess you could say, to use with athletes. And seen some interesting ones over the years and just kind of finally said, you know, we just won't be going back to this one. But every once in a while, people pop up and they're still being made and they go, what about this one? And it happens on a TriDot podcast or not podcast, webinar when we do those every now and again. I'm like, oh, that one's old. I'm like, I can't remember what's in it. I don't remember the research behind it. And I said, I'm going to have to get back to you. But that's what happens when you've been doing this for, you know, over 20 years.
You've seen it all. Yeah. So
you've seen a lot and been through a lot. So, yeah, it's usually nutrition products that I just kind of say, yeah, we're not going back to that one.
Elizabeth James, what is this answer for you?
I think I'm kind of along the same lines as Matt of, I don't know that I've fully moved on, because I still have my pink Oakley sunglasses that really just need to be trashed. I mean, the lenses are so scratched that they're honestly a little hard to see through. But yeah, I still have them. I still wear them. That was a big purchase for me. It was the first pair of sunglasses that I paid more than $10 for. And, you know, when I got them, I decided, okay, I was going to, you know, do it properly. So I customized them to like match the colors of my dry gear. They have been through so many training sessions. I mean, all of my personal bests in terms of running and triathlon, I just can't seem to give them up. So I don't know that I have moved on, but I tell you, when those have to go, it is going to be a sad day.
So this answer for me is my first road bike. Since I became a triathlete, I've had four different road bikes and two different TT bikes. But when I sold my first road bike that kind of helped get me into the sport, I did not anticipate that to be kind of a, oh my goodness, like emotional attachment. Thank you for getting me into the sport kind of moment. But when the guy came and he took it for a spin around the block and came back, yep, I like it, I'll buy it. And he loaded it in the car and took off. Like, I was like, oh my goodness, like, thank you so much for your service and for really getting me into the sport of triathlon as my first road bike. So that's this answer for me. Guys, we're going to throw this question out to you. Like we always do, make sure you're a member of the I Am Triathlete Facebook group where we will pose Coach Gina's question to you. What is a piece of tri gear that was just really difficult to move on from? You retired it, you trashed it, but you didn't want to. Or maybe you're like Matt and you're like Elizabeth and it's something that you know is about to be retired or trashed and you are just dreading that moment. Let us know. Can't wait to see what you have to say.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
We are thrilled to have Sailfish as the swim partner of TriDot Training. Sailfish was founded in 2007 by Jan Sibbersen, who was on the national German team and is the fastest swimmer to ever hit the waters of Ironman. The Sailfish mission is to create premium triathlon and open water swim products. They offer swim skins, tri suits, and swim accessories. But the core of this Sailfish product line are their award-winning wetsuits. Known for their outstanding flexibility, balanced buoyancy, and distinguished gliding properties in the water, Sailfish wetsuits are truly made to make you faster. And that certainly has been the case for me. I've swam in many different brands of wetsuits over the years, and my Sailfish is the very first one that I put on, got into the water, and clocked swim splits I had no business hitting on my own. For me, it was truly love at first stroke. With several models and price points, there for sure will be a Sailfish wetsuit that is right for you. Head to sailfish.com to check out all the neoprene goodness and use SFC-TRIDOT20 at checkout for 20% off your new wetsuit. All right, real questions from real TRIDOT athletes. I always love doing these shows. I don't have to write any of the questions. It's a lot of fun. Y'all do my job for me on these episodes. So thank you, everybody. Before we get to the questions, I want to give a quick shout out to a few questions that I am not asking today that kind of came in from athletes because we have a full length episode on these topics coming soon. First off, Caleb Spreiter suggested a question about Athena and Clydesdale athletes. Flaquita Campos asked about menopause and perimenopause. Vanessa is already writing that show. We have that interview in the works to do a conversation about that very important topic for our female population. And then Wilson Farrell asked about sleeps, naps, and power naps. That will be a crowd-pleasing episode for sure. I can't wait to learn about that. I can't believe we've gone 200 shows without talking about sleep. It's so important to recovery. Chris has talked about it a little bit on shows she's been on before, but we're going to do a full episode learning about sleep and its importance to our training and racing and recovery. So for today, let's get to today's questions. We're going to rip through these as quickly as we can. We had a lot of really good submissions on this one. I'm going to try to get to as many of them as I can on my list. Question number one came in from Vince. He wants to know, how do you balance getting down to a healthy weight while ramping up your training? And Dr. Austin, you're on this episode. We have a lot of great nutrition questions to direct to you today. What would you say to Vince on kind of trying to lose weight while fueling properly for your training?
I would say first and foremost, we've got to go back to nutrition periodization. That's really why it exists, because you don't want to be in such an energy deficit that you're going to compromise your most critical training time points. Okay. The approach I try to take, you know, when athletes are in heavy loads is that we fuel the body, we fuel the process. So we want to put this concept at the start of our training blocks and make sure that we find that energy deficit that's going to allow us to lose about 1 pound a week and make sure we understand how long it can actually be accommodated. I try to get my athletes to kind of take a look at weight loss 5 pounds at a time. Psychologically, it's very manageable and it doesn't keep you in too much of an energy deficit for too long. And, you know, then give them a little bit of a recovery period and then, you know, try to go at it again if we've gotten out in front of it early enough in the season. But, you know, I think all too frequently triathletes still have this tendency to be mid-season and turn around and say, hey, I want to lose weight. I want to try to optimize for my racing. And at the end of the day, it doesn't work well then. You know, even in elite athletes, I will not do that. I'm like, hey, you're better off to fuel the process. Even if you can't get weight down, you can't reduce your body comp to where you want it to be, fuel the process, optimize the training, and then let's come back to periodization, you know, at the forefront of next season. So that's always the best way to do it. Like, don't hurt your, you know, gains in training, because those are going to be more important anyway. I would say the only exception to this is when people do use triathlon purely to help facilitate significant amounts of weight loss, which I have seen over the years. And I think it's great. It's a great tool because there's the, you know, variation in how much you bear your body weight. It can allow for the individual to actually recover better, typically because they are needing to lose such a significant amount of weight that the joints can't handle pounding every day from running, or the way the body is, you know, put into different angles when you're on the bike. And so then that way, when you step down, you know, running, maybe swimming, biking, swimming, running, you know, that kind of a pattern, you actually offload their joints enough to help keep them actually training. So you will see that, and it will help quite a bit, especially if people come from a background where they have never trained before. And that's where we do then incorporate the dual component, but the focus is typically getting down to a healthy body weight and learning to use sport to facilitate it rather than how competitive can we be. So I will tell you that's just when I do, you know, do it kind of on the opposite side of it. And we're not necessarily at that point where we want to be competitive. And, you know, I've had people in the past come through and use sport to help them get a healthier lifestyle and then get more competitive. So it's all about where you're at, but just know that if you are in full board triathlon training, we got to make sure periodization is a part of it.
All right. Question number two, this comes from Russ. He says, I am new to TriDot. How do these structured training plans account for age differences among athletes, specifically in regard to volume and recovery? Most plans I've trained under seem generic and seldom focus on an individual's performance limiters, like, for example, a weak runner but solid swim and bike skills. How does TriDot account for recovery regarding age? And how does the plan account for individual strength and weaknesses in developing a specific plan? Russ, thank you so much for this question. We are always very happy to answer a question that allows us to talk about how special TriDot training is. Elizabeth, I'm sure you'll be more than happy to crush this question.
Yeah, I feel like I'm over here with my hand raised like, ooh, like I want this one. I
knew you would
this.
Be.
Yes. So first of all, welcome, Russ. I mean, just so glad to have you as part of the TriDot family, part of the community. And yeah, I absolutely love this question. There is so much that is going on behind the scenes in the development of every athlete's training plan. So TriDot's algorithms are designed from more than a decade worth of athlete training data. And the algorithm has learned what other athletes similar to you have done for training, what has been most beneficial for reaching your performance potential, and it's continuing to learn and refine training every single day. And that's really just scratching the surface. There are so many factors that influence training. Your profile information that you input, such as your age, your training age, how long you've been doing each sport, your gender, body composition, your functional threshold in each discipline, and not just the specific value of that threshold, but how they compare relative to one another. So, I mean, this is, you know, where Russ was talking about, you know, if they're strong in one discipline, but maybe need a little bit more improvement in some of the others. So we're looking at that, not only, you know, discipline specific, but how they interact with one another. And all of those things are different for each person by discipline, by the energy system that you're using based on that threshold. And then we also take a look at how much stress you can handle in a day, in a microcycle, a week, a month, a mesocycle. So all of these are factored to optimize your weekly volumes. And I mean, what you're doing by each discipline, how long your long sessions are, how far you go, not just in a particular week, but, you know, what you're capable of increasing that to while keeping that injury risk in check. And then additionally, we've got physiogenomics, which can further enhance the specificity, that's a tough word, of the algorithms
it
for
is.
Your training,
yeah, it really is.
Particularly when it comes to recovery. Specificity, yeah. And so with physiogenomics, we're looking at the specific alleles for recovery rate and injury predisposition. I mean, I feel like I almost kind of gave so much information that it didn't even necessarily answer the question specifically. But rest assured, yes, your age is taken into consideration when we're looking at recovery. When we're looking at the stress of each session, we are also taking a look at, you know, the difference between swim, bike, and run, what your strengths are, what your opportunities are for your best performance. And some of that comes into with bike to run factor. Others of that is just looking at those fizzy factors and what you have as an opportunity in the training.
It's really fun, Elizabeth, to if you are ever signed up for the same race as somebody else, particularly if it's middle distance or long course, if that person is very different from you biologically, you know, send some texts back and forth and ask them what their training looks like on a particular day, because it's really fascinating to see the differences in place. And the example I'll give, and I think I've said this before on the podcast, There's a guy I ride with pretty frequently, Paul Wolf. He's a tri-dot athlete from Southlake, Texas. And Paul and I were signed up for the same Ironman Texas. And sure, it was Ironman Texas that ended up getting canceled, but we didn't know that at the time. And so we're training for Ironman Texas. That's doomed to not even happen. And we were comparing notes because Paul is in his 50s. I'm in my 30s. And Paul is a better cyclist. I'm a better runner. And so we could see the way Tridot was prepping us for that race a little bit differently. We'd have the same sessions perhaps on a Saturday, the same bike, the same run, but his bike might be an hour shorter than mine because I needed more time on the bike because I was going to be out on course longer. And then my run might be shorter than his because my run in theory was supposed to take shorter than his. You could see, he texted me one time. I had a run on Strava and I was like, oh, zone two run. And he could see my average heart rate for my zone two run was like 152 beats per minute. And he's like, 150, is that really your zone two? Yeah, that's my zone two. And he's like, for me, I'm like, that's interval pace. That's zone five. Like I'm passing out at 152 beats. So if you compare notes with a very different athlete getting ready for a similar event at the same time as you, it's really cool to see how Tridot does things differently for every single athlete. So great response there, Elizabeth. Question number three. And I have a strength training triple header here. Three very similar questions. Flaquita Campos says, I want to know when to lift. My legs are too sore if I lift pre-run or pre-bike, but I feel like I don't get the quality workout if I do it after. What do you think here?
It's all about priorities. I think when we think about strength training, we always gravitate to load training. Strength training is not just load training. It's really important for our listeners to understand that. Strength training could also be mobility work, stability work, and movement-based work. All three of these can be implemented year-round in season because they are not load training. I'm a huge fan of separate sessions. Dr. Alston also mentioned about using fueling. You need to go into these sessions optimized to get the best product out. The priority should be the bike or should be the run on that day. And then later on at a separate time, if that is possible, go and do your strength work, whatever that might look like for you on that day. But go into it ready for performance, not at a deficit.
The second strength question in our strength triple header comes from Ryan. He is asking about strength training days, things like doing your arms and your core on swimming days or doing your legs, et cetera, on run bike days, how many days a week, reps, sets. So just in general, he's looking at within the, and Matt, you started to get to this a little bit, but within the calendar week, when I'm looking at my training week, where in the week should I be putting certain types of strength training? And I'm sure this varies athlete to athlete. Dr. Austin.
I think the philosophy I've used over the years is what is going to allow you to do the highest quality and optimize recovery. So oftentimes you will see that on swim days, you may follow it up with some upper body lifting. And then on, bike run days, that's when you do your lower body. However, at the same time, if there's not enough recovery in between bike, run, lift type days, and you go into a swim and you got to do a lot of kick-based work, might not be the smartest thing either. So it's got to be flexible, and you've got to think through what are you truly trying to develop, and what is the strength training for? So that's how I approach it. But I think you'll find that for the most part, you can get, upper body twice a week, lower body twice a week. If you can get to three times a week, it's great. Big advocate of it, but kind of hard to do with triathlon training. So you got to be really intentional with the strength side.
Donna Allen Tosh, advice for athletes 60 plus years old, how to deal with soreness, fatigue, recovery without missing workouts. We absolutely want to take care of our master athletes here. So Coach Matt, what do you say here for athletes over 60 years of age?
I don't care if you're 60, I don't care if you're 20, recovery, recovery, recovery. Embrace it with as much zeal and intensity and passion as you do your intervals. It should command so much more attention than athletes currently give it. Sleep, hydration, nutrition, they're the cornerstone. Those are the, I hate to say, the easy things that we can put our energy and time into, but they're the things you can't buy. Focus on getting 8 hours of sleep. Focus on rehydrating. Focus on good nutrition. Those are the things that prepare the body for getting back to working out the next day. It's crucial. Also, making sure you're getting an adequate warm-up. Are you doing your dynamic warm-ups? Are you adding in self-myofascial release? Are you doing your drills to prep the body for exercise? Then also make sure you're doing a proper cool-down. It's important that you get your static stretching post-exercise, that you revisit the foam roller again. If you have access to compression therapy, such as maybe the Normatex or maybe some of the other devices that are out there, do you have access to ice baths, cryotherapy, massage therapy, muscle scraping? I mean, there's so many things out there. Dry needling. There's so many things that we can take advantage of this day and age that if we want to invest our time and energy into, that are there to help with recovery. But at the end of the day, I think it all goes back to getting sleep, hydration, nutrition. And the other thing is staying within your zones. Don't outkick your coverage. I tell my athletes this all the time. If it calls for zone four, keep it zone four. Don't push to zone five just because you felt good. If it calls for zone two, keep it zone two. Don't make zone two, zone three, zone four work because you felt good. What you do today has huge implications on tomorrow. So stay within your zones. Don't overcook it. I always tell my athletes, we're baking brownies. You got to follow the recipe. If you don't follow the recipe, the brownies don't taste good. Follow the recipe.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I'll come back to is the nutrition side. And what I find my clients have struggled with the most when they are an older competitor is that they say, you know what, Krista, I'm trying to manage my body weight, my body composition. And as we do age, our resting metabolic rate decreases and the overall caloric consumption that we can utilize to optimize performance declines. And so you'll hear them say, I feel more sore, I feel more fatigue. And so that's just where the intent with every timing opportunity, with every quality opportunity that we have has to be there. But then the other thing that I've, looked at a good bit is just supplementation for older adults with creatine. Even if it's a small amount, like 1 gram before a hard workout, 1 gram after to help the muscle itself recover. And it actually seems to, be really beneficial to them. So just something to stay cognizant of. I think sometimes we villainize supplements a little bit or say, get your, nutrition right. But as we age, the caloric intake actually declines that we need. So sometimes a little bit more reliance on supplements actually helps us if we're going to be really active.
I'm giving Elizabeth just a nice long break here, but my next set of questions, this is a doubleheader about intermittent fasting. And Dr. Austin, I'll just say both of these questions at once. I think they're super similar, and I'll let you kind of talk to us about intermittent fasting. We do have a full episode with Krista about intermittent fasting. For today, Laura Rakita and Karen Smith asked these two questions. Can you do intermittent fasting while training for an Ironman and fasting during training or fasting after a season? Curious if that will help pare down those extra 15 pounds.
So I come back to what is your why? Okay, the question is, why are you doing the intermittent fasting and when are you putting it into your plan? You have to remember that fasting by definition doesn't have to be full refrainment from fueling. It could also just be certain macros before key sessions or, refrainment from, fluids for some reason. So the question is, what do you mean by fasting even? I have certain clients who say, what if I want to cut it down to an 8 or 6 hour window? And I say, okay, why are you doing it? And sometimes it's just that in order to control or optimize when they take in their fueling, they will fast for that long. And I know that that's something kind of newer in the endurance sport world, but I'll have ones that say, look, Krista, I really got to fuel for my training, which happens in the afternoon or the evening. And we'll move that window all the way up to like maybe 10 a.m. in the morning. So that by the time they get to a 3 or 4 p.m. workout, they've actually been able to put the calories in they need to really fuel the session and then have calories for afterwards. And a lot of it's about manipulating the caloric intake that you are supposed to be taking in. People do use intermittent fasting to help them try to lose weight. And that's what that concept's talking about. But they want to optimize training at the same time. So I'll say, okay, we'll expand that window from 12 to maybe 16 hours and put an 8-hour window there just because you feel like you need a certain number of calories to make your workout go and then a certain number of calories to recover. So the time window and when we eat is scrunched down. So there's a lot of different concepts around fasting. We do an entire webinar on it with TriDot, and we talk about all those different types. You know, what is fasting versus fueling? What's the maximum versus the minimum? And what are the different strategies we can use to actually implement this concept? So it's kind of broad, but it is something that you can use to try and help drop body weight. And I think, you know, for a lot of women, it's like, okay, I got to get this down. I'm not as big as a guy is. I don't get as many calories and I've got less to play with in essence in order to drop that weight. And so we kind of have to help them optimize when they are taking their calories and macros in.
Yep. Thank you so much. Great response there. Our next question comes from Josh Vernon. Now, Josh, in case you don't know, he is a Triad ambassador. He's an Athletic Brewing Company ambassador. And he is the guy, if you ride Peloton and you train with Peloton, if you ever see somebody in the background of the Peloton studio classes that end up in front of you on the screen wearing a TriDot ambassador visor, that is my man, Josh Vernon. And he wants to know tips and tricks for fueling reminders on the bike, when to do it and where to store it. Elizabeth, go ahead, jump in, say a little something.
All right. Yeah. This honestly, I've told athletes you need to eat like it's your job, because I've found that a lot of athletes actually under fuel on the bike. So in terms of when, I'd say often, you know, we need to fuel, and a lot of athletes will find that smaller amounts of fuel more frequently will lessen that GI distress that they may have, you know, dealt with in the past or we're looking to avoid. One of the best things that I have personally done and recommend for my coached athletes is to set timers or reminders. And often I do this on like a time interval versus anything with distance, because depending on where they're racing, there may be varied terrain and it may be different, you know, if they're doing 5 miles up the side of a mountain versus 5 miles, you know, on a descent or a flat area. And so I really like having, you know, either a timer on their bike computer or on their watch that beeps and reminds them, hey, now it's time to fuel. Sometimes we also do this in terms of, you know, this is my timer for fueling on my bike computer, and on my watch, I've got my reminders for hydration. And, you know, based off of what they need to be consuming, both from a nutrition and a hydration perspective, they have those reminders for what to do. And then in terms of where to store it, I think this is a really important consideration as athletes are planning their race nutrition strategy. Because yeah, not only do we need to consume all of this, but somehow we have to transport it or have access to it on the course. This will vary a little bit if an athlete is going to be able to take in some of the nutrition that's provided on the course that they're racing, or if they are going to be responsible for carrying all of it, or if there's an opportunity for them to stop at a personal needs location and get some more of it as well. You know, bento box on the bike, jersey pockets, the bottles that they're carrying. I mean, you might have to have a little bit more nutrition in a bottle versus all in the bento box, depending on what's available on course. So I'd just say that, you know, that's part of what needs to be practiced. And that's the big thing here. Practice it. Know what you're going to take in, know where you're going to carry it, how often you need to consume it.
I refer to nutrition, hydration, electrolytes, and apparel as the controllables. Every training session is an opportunity to work on nutrition, electrolytes, hydration, and apparel. It doesn't matter what they are. We should be drinking fluids no matter if it's a 20-minute run. Get in the habit. Carry your handheld with you. Get used to having to sip water every 15 minutes. Use those audible reminders. If you don't develop the little habits on the short sessions, like the 20-minute run, they won't carry over to the big sessions. So develop the habits. Use the audible reminder. Get used to hydrating, using the electrolytes, and at what rate? That's trial and error. That's why we train. It's better to try those things during each individual training session to see how much fuel your body can assimilate, what your hydration rate is, what your electrolyte utilization needs to be. Hydration, electrolytes, and fuel don't always occur at the same rate, so you got to be flexible in your approach. Aerohydration parts. People tape things to their frame, whatever it is you need to do. And I can't emphasize enough taking advantage of that personal needs area. If you go in there and you just take the time to sit down, refuel, top your bottles off, whatever your fuel of choice is, the return on the investment is huge. Most of us are not going to be making the podium. So by taking the time and personal needs to fill up your water, top off your nutrition, and get what you need, it's a huge return on investment.
Question number 7. This comes from an athlete who has a pretty cool coach, Jennifer Charters. She's an Elizabeth James coached athlete. She said, I would love to hear about a protocol for using Delta G. Why should I try it and what benefit might I get from it? How does one use it for providing that benefit? Right now, it seems like a solution looking for a problem that I don't know I have. Elizabeth mentioned she's been experimenting with it, and Dr. Austin seems like she could add some good insight. I also think Dr. Austin could add some good insight here. Krista, talk to us about leveraging the Delta G ketone ester into our training and racing.
Yeah, well, the first thing I'm going to say is, you know, if you don't feel like you need it, then that's okay. Like, if you don't feel like you've got that problem, you don't have to go diving into something, but they are overly attractive right now because it's a newer item on the sport nutrition market. So, you know, the question is, you know, do you need it for like cognition during the day? Do you need it as an alternative fuel source? The question is, what is your why? So at the end of the day, we have to ask, what is your why? You know, how long are you racing? How long will you be out there? And how does it help you improve your performance? So I think you've got to step back and say, hey, if this is something that is a solution for a problem I don't have, that's okay. You don't have to go try them. But if you want to work with them as an alternative fuel source, maybe, and try starting there, you know, go ahead. You know, I would start with the smallest dose you think is reasonable for you. Typically that's for like a 70.3 and, you know, take a, you know, half a bottle of the performance and see if it helps your swim and your bike and run, and then say, did that help me at all? And then, you know, if you say, yeah, it did, put the other half of the bottle midway through the bike. And so it's a simple protocol, but I think it's something you could give a try. And then if you wanted to add on to it, say, let me do another half bottle at the end of my race to see if it helps facilitate recovery. And the biggest thing you might find is that it's more cognitive and recovery based, or it lets you kick back on the carbohydrate fuel and use a different fuel source. So really the question is, you know, what are you trying to utilize it for?
One of the things that I really like about Delta G is just the availability that they have to do those free consultations with athletes. And I have found that to be a great resource. I mean, you can schedule a call with Brian from Delta G, and if you find that it's a beneficial, you know, source of either fuel or a great way to recover, he can sit down and talk you through how to best implement that, not only with your current nutrition strategy, but, you know, offering suggestions for where else you might want to put it in terms of after hard training sessions for recovery as well.
Question number 8, this comes from Trey. He asks, is there any way to identify whether muscle cramping at the end of a race is because of a nutrition issue or a training issue? How do you tackle it once you've experienced that? Trey said, I have trained with no cramping issues. I've even had race rehearsal distances. And then on race day and at race effort, I get muscle cramping pretty hard towards the end. Do I need a coach or nutritionist or both? Is there anything I can do on my own until I can get that kind of help? And yeah, it's funny. I don't think I've had cramp issues during races. I've certainly had cramp issues during hard training sessions. So kind of the opposite of Trey, but I've had a similar thought. Like, am I cramping right now because of hydration, or am I cramping right now because my muscles are just a little weak and need to probably beef up with some strength training? So Matt, Dr. Austin, talk to us about this. Matt, I'll start with you.
I definitely think it comes down to adequate electrolyte and hydration. It's important that, and again, this is a hard concept to understand, but you got to make sure you're getting enough electrolytes and enough hydration. They work in tandem. You don't want to over dilute. It's all about concentrations. And I think that's a hard thing for people to understand. If we oversaturate and put too much water in, we can actually risk kind of excreting the electrolytes we want to have. But if we don't put enough in, then again, we're also at a deficit there. Can't stress enough. We have access now, guys, to doing sweat tests. We need to take a look at what we're actually losing and looking at replenishment and replacement. So we have the technology now that we don't go in blind. So I think we need to do our due diligence by doing the research on that, putting ourselves through the sweat test. That way we can make sure that we're adequately replacing what we lose while biking and while running. And I also will go back to the training. Were you doing the right training? Did you miss training sessions? Were you hitting the intensities that were specified? Because if you're missing those sessions and the body is not able to get those adaptations, maybe race day was just a little too much of higher intensity that the body wasn't ready for. So that could be a possibility as well. But I would tend to go back that it was more environmental conditions and inadequate hydration and electrolytes.
Dr. Austin, anything to add there on cramping?
Yeah, I mean, I typically look first and foremost at sodium concentration, really. How much do you lose in your sweat? Have you done the sweat testing necessary? And then I try to make sure athletes are having more than they're actually sweating out. And then I say, carry base salt with you or something similar like that, another product like that, to just give it a dab on your tongue. If all of a sudden it's relieved, then you know that that's a, pretty good sign that it's electrolyte based. Now on the back end of that, if you don't get a response off of the electrolyte side of the coin, then know that it may be more biomechanical and it just may be that you haven't seen it in training yet and that somehow biomechanically you're getting fatigued enough that you're inducing cramps due to alterations in mechanics, fatigue muscles, that just haven't been trained properly enough. So I start with the electrolytes, but then I go into the biomechanical side typically.
Question number 9 comes from Matthew. He wants to know if there's any tips and tricks on nutrition and balancing workouts and recovery for age groupers with what he is calling high impact jobs, things like landscapers, concreters, construction workers, or anyone else on their feet all day. Krista, what would you say to somebody like Matthew who maybe has a high impact job or is on their feet all day about tips and tricks for nutrition and recovery to train and do their job?
Breakfast needing to be a very energy dense breakfast, something like avocado and eggs on toast, put cheese in there, something that really tastes good, right? So you're willing to eat a good bit of it. But then once you're out there, the question is, what can you easily take with you? Is it, higher energy density foods like nuts and dried fruit, trail mix, crackers with peanut butter on it? Do you need a more sustaining fuel source like the ketone esters maybe or some Ucan? And then make sure if you're going to do your training a little bit later in the day that you look at the timing of fuel before the training. Maybe that's the most important time for you to make sure that you do get something in based off what you're able to carry as you go and do your job. Typically, you can pack the pockets, right, with energy dense snacks and utilize those. But you probably will have a big job to do, would be my guess, when you go home for dinner and making sure you get everything you need for the next day. So that's the trick I've oftentimes worked on with people who do have high impact jobs. The other thing you might consider is whether or not you're hydrating well enough to help even optimize that hunger, optimize what you're putting into your body, because they're like, eventually I just shut down. It gets so hot, you're so fatigued that you also stop drinking. They don't put electrolytes in their fluid. So basics like that, you have to figure out, how can I try to do this? How can I go back to my truck? How can I go back to, an office that's maybe there on site to grab the snacks that I need? Okay. It's not just high impact jobs like what he was describing, but that might also apply to, medical professionals who work in a hospital, like nurses. They're really busy running up and down the hall. The question is, how am I ever going to eat during the day? We have surgeons who, you know, go into surgery for hours on end. And the question is, how are they going to make sure their hand doesn't get shaky while they're in there, right? You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
They got to make sure they front load. Yeah, you don't want that to happen. You know, they might be using some UCAN and ketone esters to help them get through the actual surgery. And then they might have to backload on the back end. So there's a lot of occupations out there that actually require it. But, you know, definitely packing items like that, that can get you through until you are able to get home or are able to get wherever you need to go to get something that's, you know, much better for you.
Question number 10 from Leslie Kratkowski. She says, I'm interested in more guidance on how much open water swim practice is needed. Before Tridot, once the weather cooperated, most of my swim training was open water, as I thought that is what I needed to do. But Tridot swim workouts and pool school, I have done so much to develop me as a better swimmer. I struggle with how much open water swimming I need to incorporate now. And Leslie, thankfully for you, we have two Tridot pool school instructors on the episode today. Elizabeth, Matt, what would you say to Leslie about how much open water swimming to incorporate in your training?
Well, first of all, Leslie, just congrats on your pool school graduation. And I mean, just awesome to hear that you are continuing to work on technique. What I'd say here is that, you know, we race in open water. And so it's super important to incorporate this into training. I know that Coach JoJo is a big advocate of that as well. She's like, you know, most of us are not racing in the pool, so we shouldn't expect to do all of our training in the pool and then perform well once we get to open water, because there is a skill set that is needed in order to have our best performance in that environment. I would say that as weather allows and as it's safe to do so, a weekly open water swim is a great opportunity to practice not only those skills, but increase your confidence so that when you arrive on race day, you feel not only comfortable, but you've practiced what you need to for your best performance. A lot of my coached athletes will see a weekly open water swim session on their schedule. And so if that is something that, you know, isn't available or is only available seasonally, we'll put that in when we can and really just make the most of those opportunities. But I would say if you can do an open water swim session once a week, that is going to be a fantastic resource.
Matt Summer, anything to add?
100% agree. I can't emphasize that enough. I mean, we develop what I call our absolute speed in the pool, but speed is nothing without confidence, and you develop that confidence in the open water. As EJ mentioned, yeah, we race in open water. You got to get out there. One little thing I like to do, if you can add an extra swim, most people have their swims on Mondays and Fridays. That's the default Tridot schedule. Add it on a Wednesday or add it on a Sunday. If your schedule permits, throw an open water swim on Wednesday or Sunday. That way the swims are structured throughout the week and you have a little bit of time in between. If you cannot add an extra swim on Wednesday or Sunday, I'm a big fan of substituting the open water swim in for the Friday effort. Again, it gets you in the open water. Now, the biggest thing, and EJ mentioned this as well, is safety. Never swim alone, people. Don't go out in open water by yourself. Make sure you're doing your due diligence. Wear a swim buoy. Make sure you're not swimming at dusk or dawn. Make sure you're highly visible. If you do go out there, have somebody else with you. It's always a better idea to have a kayaker or somebody on a stand-up paddleboard just in case something happens. But you got to get out there. You got to build the confidence. You got to work on sighting. You got to work on your entries. You got to work on being in the wetsuit. You got to work on coming out of the water and getting out of the wetsuit. These are all skills that can be developed and honed in on in training. So again, it's not just the act of swimming, it's confidence, it's comfort, and it's moving towards the transitions then of getting out of it as well. So all huge things to think about.
Our next question, I'm looking at the clock and trying to get as, I really genuinely try to pack as many questions as I can into these episodes. And our next one comes from a Tridot ambassador, Nadav. And his question is how to get better at recognizing good pain versus bad pain. I was going to ask this and have Krista and Matt talk to it, but just for time, I'm going to tell our audience I have a YouTube interview with Dr. BJ Liepert that went out on the Tryout Triathlon show maybe a month or so ago, where Dr. BJ Liepert talks about this exact thing. It was 15 minutes of us talking about good pain versus bad pain, answering this exact question. So I would encourage you to go find that. Or on the podcast, there's an episode on August 9th, 2021 called The Hurt Locker, Why Athletes Feel Pain, where it's 1 hour of this. So I'm going to direct you guys to that episode so I can move on here. Question 12 on this show. We have a couple athletes asking about their assessments. And Matt, Elizabeth, I know both of you coach your athletes through how to do their assessments on TriDot as well as they can. Here's the exact questions. Tim asked, if my 5K times aren't changing and I'm always able to hit the high end of my threshold pace during my runs, when is it okay to lie to the system and manually input a faster 5K time than I actually did? And here's what Tim is saying. Maybe I just can't pass that pain hurdle during assessments, but I have no problem on my normal workouts. I feel like my zones need to be higher to see any improvements. So he feels like maybe he's just not testing as well as he works out. And Tim is a longtime tryouter, so I know he's not new to it. So he's observed this over time. Bryson asked this about his assessments. Tips on how to structure the assessments, particularly the run and the bike. Doing what I think is an all-out usually means I can't sustain it, and trying to guess off the last threshold pace isn't helpful either. So Bryson's asking, how do I pace those swim, bike, and rest assessments? So Matt, Elizabeth, would love to hear what you guys think just about how to execute our assessments, and can we lie to the system to make sure our workouts are what we need them to be at? Coach Matt.
First of all, lying is never a good thing. So we'll let that transcend to our training as well. You know, execution and ability are two separate things. I tell my athletes all the time, execution of an assessment is a skill of its own. It takes practice. It takes time. It doesn't happen perfectly the first time. We've all done there, myself included. We blow up on an assessment. Just because you do poorly on an assessment, I joke when I say this, is just because you fail one test in fourth grade doesn't mean they send you back to third grade. So we have a bad assessment, we let it go. If it was an ability issue, we'll address that a lot sooner. But if it was execution, we learn, we live, we go back to the drawing board. We don't look in the rearview mirror. Now, I'm a big fan when it comes time to assessments, to really answer Bryson's part. And again, I'm a man of quotes. You got to play the song you've been practicing. Assessment day is not the time to sing a new song. You've been rehearsing this song for the past 3 weeks. Don't go out on assessment day and try to play a new instrument or play the new song. Practice what you've been doing. All you're doing is your rehearsal day. It's just like your kids when it's time to do band rehearsal or choir or whatever it might be. It's your recital day. Go out there and recite what you've been doing. Now, as far as pacing, I've got little ways that I like to execute either assessment. For the FTP, I break it down into four sessions. I break it into an 8-minute chunk, a 5-minute chunk, a 5-minute chunk, and a 2-minute chunk. It makes it more manageable. It makes it easier to approach. That first 8 minutes, it's nothing but a standard threshold interval that we do every week. That's how you have to approach that. That first 8 minutes is just getting comfortable. That's all it is. You're working typically on the middle to the top end of threshold, which we've done. We've sang that song. We're doing it. That's all we're doing. The next 5 minutes, we're going to start working at the top end of zone four. So again, we've been there. We've done that. We're not outside our comfort zone yet. The next 5 minutes, it's a step up. Think about the step up workouts where we build confidence. It's a 5-minute zone five step up. And then that last 2 minutes, think power builders. We go there where we do the 60 seconds all out. So it's a power builder for that last 2 minutes. And so we're really just ramping up and doing a nice progression ride. So I find that when my athletes follow the recipe, the brownies come out great. Then for the 5K, I break it down into four chunks, 3/4 of a mile, 3/4 of a mile, 1 mile, 6/10. Similar philosophy as far as going in at threshold, starting to build, and then all out. You got to be disciplined. You got to be focused. And then for the swim assessment, it's like Dr. Seuss, pace, build, race. Pace the first 100, pace the second 100, build through the third 100, race that last 100. Again, you got to go in with a game plan, go in with a recipe, stick to it, stay disciplined on the front end. Okay. So have fun with them. Assessments can be a huge source of stress. You can't let it go there. Have fun with them. All you're doing is rehearsing and reciting what you've been practicing.
Honestly, I would say that my advice is super similar. I just didn't have all the cool analogies with, you know, the songs and the brownies. So I feel like I need to take a page out of Matt's book there and, you know, make it a little bit more fun. But I just love what you were emphasizing in terms of, you know, we've already been doing this. And that's the biggest thing that I try to tell my athletes too. I mean, by the time you are at the assessments, you've had the opportunity to do long efforts at threshold. And this is just another opportunity to do a threshold interval. Granted, it might be a little bit longer. But yeah, we need to go into that as we would, you know, any other workout session. And truly, that's all that this is. Yes, you know, it has the name of the assessment, but this is another opportunity to train, another opportunity to build fitness. And that's what it is at the end of the day. I used to have so much anxiety over these sessions. And once I could start viewing them as just like, okay, yeah, this is just another Tuesday bike workout. Like the interval is 20 minutes today. Then it really changed my perspective of it and allowed me to execute it better than when I got all worked up about, oh my goodness, the title of the workout itself.
Okay, I'm going to close out our main set here. I'm calling these questions quick hitters. I want one coach to give a quick answer, and we're going a little long here, so I'm going to challenge y'all. I'm going to pose the question, I'm going to assign it to a coach, and I want you to go 20, 30 second response, and we're going to move on because we got to shut this down and get to our coach cooldown tip with Vanessa. So quick hitting question number one from Jessica Smith, how to get braver going faster on the bike. Any tips for kind of practicing confidence and good bike handling? Coach Matt.
Well, first off, this is a technical skill you have to practice, and safety is always first, so keep that in mind. What I would say is first start with smaller hills, staying aero, and learning to pedal downhill. This will help you maintain balance and momentum, and then gradually just start doing this on steeper descents and build your confidence. Confidence and bike handling, that's what's key here. And I will say this, though, Jessica, there's no shame in being cautious, but it is a skill that can be developed. Technically.
Nicole Hobbs, I'd love to hear tips on when to set a discipline to low, standard, or high on TriDot. Based on the descriptions, I would guess most people use standard, but it seems a fair number of coached athletes use different settings. Elizabeth, talk to us about this.
Yeah, great question. Coached athletes don't necessarily use a different setting, but they just have the opportunity for their coach to make those manual adjustments to the training plan that might account for their schedule, the life stress that they have. I would say this, keep it at standard unless you have the reason to change it. If you're not able to complete your workouts at that standard level, let's take it down to low volume. Let's be successful there. If you have additional time for training, high volume might be something for you, but just keep this in mind. More is not better if you cannot recover from more. Additionally, understand that this might change from season to season. Like as a school teacher, I could manage higher volumes of training in the summer than I could during the school year. When I was getting my master's degree, I could only manage a lower training volume because at a standard volume of training, I was not recovering well. I wasn't getting enough sleep. So more isn't always better. Standard, unless you have, you know, a reason to change it down a little bit lower, or you have the opportunity to bump it up if you can recover from it.
Yep, that's great. Our next one comes from Scott. He said, you had a great episode on the TriDot YouTube show that talked about trying out running shoes and which ones best suit you with all the aero and TT helmets out there. How can the average Joe know they are investing in a triathlon helmet that suits them best for shaving watts? I've asked you a lot of questions. I'm actually going to take this one because I'm a gear junkie and I love nerding out on this stuff. And we actually, Scott, back on episode 41 of the TriDot podcast, if you haven't gone back that far, that was called Is Aero Everything? Answers from a Specialized Wind Tunnel Engineer. We had a wind tunnel engineer from Specialized Bikes on the show talking about aero. And basically when it comes to helmets, I mean, helmets are a huge help if you get the right one for you. But helmets, you can only tell it's the proper one if you get into a wind tunnel. And sometimes what you think might be the best one isn't the best one. It all comes down to your aero position and how your body and your bike interacts with the wind. His one tip that he gives on that for the average Joe is to take a picture of yourself in the helmet, from the front and the back, holding what is your actual arrow position, not the position that you wish was your arrow position, but your actual arrow position, and just kind of visualize how it interacts with the back of the helmet, how it interacts with kind of your shoulders and your back. So my recommendation is almost do what I say with running shoes. Order 3, 4, or 5 of them on a credit card. Get them in. Get on your trainer indoors with the tag still on. Don't sweat in the thing, but take that picture from the front and side and just kind of see by the eye, you know, what has the cleanest line going from the helmet to your back. That's probably the best way us average Joes can do it. Return the ones that don't work. Keep one. Now, what I did personally, I found a cool-looking black Aero helmet on eBay that was had the biggest sale. I bought it, and I've used it ever since. Was it scientific? No, but that's the way I did it. But that's what I would recommend is, since most of us can't afford the time in the wind tunnel, maybe just get a few, whether that's ordering them to your house or going to a bike shop that has a few, and just before you buy, eyeballing how it interacts with your back. That was longer than 30 seconds. I apologize after making a big deal about that. Next one, Debbie Colson. How does being a type 2 pre-diabetic diabetic impact workout and race nutrition? Dr. Austin.
So working on a pre-diabetic or diabetic state means making sure your overall glycemic response throughout the day and caloric intake are appropriate, okay? During training, you should be able to keep the recommendations that they have out there for the everyday person. However, I will say if you're addressing the pre-diabetic or diabetic state with any type of ketogenic or carnivore type nutrition approach, you typically can lower the overall intake, maybe even to the bottom end of the recommendation of 0.5 gram of carbohydrate per minute. So feel free to fuel training with carbohydrates, but just know that it's the overall glycemic response and caloric intake that's really going to help you keep that under control.
All right, two more. Craig Jimenez says, I'm about to turn 58 and I pee a lot. I also sweat a lot. Craig's just really, really airing it out there. I admire it. He says, I take in all of my calories on the bike as a liquid and I target 32 to 40 ounces an hour, but I find I have to stop several times during a race to relieve myself. He's also taking in 1200 milligrams of sodium an hour, which is quite a bit. If I take in more, I pee less, but then my hands swell up with water retention. I'm hesitant to lower the fluid intake for fear of dehydration. So he does know his precision fuel and hydration sodium sweat rate is around 1,000 milligrams of sodium per liter of fluid loss. A lot of detail there, but basically the question is, what advice do you have, Dr. Austin, for somebody who is just, they're trying to hydrate properly and just finding that they're having to pee a lot?
Yes, the first question I would need to know the answer to is, what is your actual sweat rate? You know, you talk about what you take in per hour versus the amount of sodium you put per liter fluid. That's good to know all of that information, but it may just be that we've got to manage the amount of fluid intake with that level of sodium, okay? So, you know, the question I also have, I guess, is could you use something like base salt because it's a different enough form to maybe make a difference? So you could take it, you know, kind of more intermittently. And then the question from my perspective is, what is the difference between 1200 milligrams at 32 ounces and 1500 milligrams at 32 ounces versus doing it at 40 ounces? So it goes back to knowing the actual sweat rate per hour. So once we have a piece of information like that, we could actually try to help you answer this question. I just don't know if when you say sweating a lot means I sweat 32 to 40 ounces of an hour. I will tell you that the most I've ever seen my elites take in is a liter an hour, which is about 33 ounces. So it may be that you've got an upper limit there that we've got to kind of take a look at.
Andy Blow from Precision has talked about sweat rate, and you can very semi-scientifically find that out by weighing yourself kind of before a session and after a session and seeing how much weight you lost during a session. Last question for today. This comes from Jason Cole. He says, what is the trick to consistently getting up early and getting your workout in? The whole be disciplined thing gets snoozed some mornings. Wondering if it ever clicks and just gets easier. Elizabeth, are there any tricks to being more disciplined with getting up and getting at it?
Well, I would say that, you know, getting into a routine of waking up earlier is absolutely possible. I joke often that I have a toddler bedtime, but I do go to bed very early to make those early, early morning wake up calls easier. Yeah. As someone, Andrew, that has been on a number of staff trips with me, you know that I'm always like first to retire and go to bed. But yeah, if you are struggling to get out of bed, put your alarm clock across the room. That way you physically have to get out of bed to turn it off.
That was my college trick. College Andrew did that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because likely once you're out of bed, I mean, you're just going to continue on with what you set your alarm for in the first place. Last thing I'll say is just have everything ready in the morning. You know, set out your workout clothes, make your bottles ahead of time. For me, if I've got a bike workout, I'll download the Trot.Zwift file, load that into Zwift, have the computer there. And just know that, like, you've already set everything up. So there's not a whole lot to do once you're out of bed too. You've already, you know, won half the battle by being prepared.
If I can add one thing to that, I know Jason well, but what I would say is, Jason, put the alarm clock on your wife's side of the bed. She'll make sure you get up. I promise.
There we go.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Guess what time it is? It's Coach Cooldown Tip Time, and I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. And joining me today is Rhea Usher. Rhea is a full-time triathlon coach with the UK-based Precision Race Team, and her husband Will are the UK team leads in charge of growing Tridot and predictive fitness on British soil. Rhea is no stranger to competitive sports and found her way to triathlon as she was rehabbing from a career-ending ski crash. Since 2017, she has raced six fulls and more than 20 70.3s, often sitting on the podium or qualifying and medaling at ETU and ITU championships. In coaching, Rhea has helped hundreds of athletes from beginners all the way to Kona qualifiers, and they all have one thing in common. They want to reach their potential and smash their goals. Welcome to the cool down, Rhea.
Hey, Vanessa. I think I'm actually going to ask you to write my bios for the rest of time, because that was so well put in such a short space of time. That's awesome. I'm really great to be here.
It's so awesome to have you here. And I'm so excited to finally meet you. It's truly a pleasure to be here with a fellow Canadian who loves triathlon and someone who also loves to travel, which is one of my passions as well. So now something that most people don't know about you is that you have been to over 100 countries, which is absolutely incredible. So I have a question for you. I'm wondering, what is the next country that's at the top of your list?
Well, I've been so lucky to go to so many, but there is still one on my bucket list that I haven't been able to get to yet. And I would love to go to Chile. It's got three of my biggest sort of passions in the world. One is you're traveling. So like at the most southern end of Chile, you've got the archipelago, which is just like, for me, the most incredible thing, all those amazing islands and the topography of the sea and the sand and the mountains. It's got beaches and mountains so you can ski and swim and cycle and surf. And then to top it all off, it's got some of the best wines I've ever tasted. So, I mean, it's kind of like the best trifecta you could possibly imagine.
That sounds incredible.
So why I haven't been there yet.
Right? I was just going to say, it sounds like this is the perfect place for you. Why have you not been there yet?
It's been on the top of my list. And I think maybe the reason why I haven't been there yet is because for me, it's like a 2-month adventure. Right. You know, I want to start at the top and make my way all the way down. And in order to do that, I need enough time. So, and definitely during like tri season, that's just not possible with all the races you've got.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you get there sooner rather than later. All right. So what tip do you have for us today?
My biggest tip for anyone doing triathlon, no matter whether you are a total beginner or you are a Kona qualifier, is you do you, boo. And I say that to every single one of my athletes, probably on a weekly basis, because most of us who get into triathlon are A-type personalities. We're very driven. We're very ambitious. And probably more so than so many different sports, because why would you try and perfect one sport when you could perfect three? right?
Yeah.
And that it means that we're a certain type of person. That certain type of person is competitive. They can be competitive with themselves, but more often than not, we can be competitive with other people. And so many things can influence us, and there's social media and the influence of what people are posting and what they say is going on with their lives, or, you know, your teammates telling you what watts they've pushed and how fast they're running. And at the end of the day, even though these might be your friends, we don't know how accurate social media posts are or whether their FTPs are what they are. So you do you. And don't worry about what everyone else is doing, because you're on your own triathlon journey. And that journey is going to have its peaks and troughs just like everyone else. But those peaks are going to be at different time as, you know, your training partner. It's you do you, and don't worry about what anyone else is doing.
I think that's a really important message for everyone. Just like you said, it's hard. Like, it's really hard to not compare yourself to everybody. And like, you know, just as you said, being competitive, how many times have we seen this GIF that comes around? You know, if you're asking, the answer is yes, we are racing. Have you seen that
one? Yeah, right.
Yeah. And it's so true, right? Like you're always trying to compare yourself to somebody. You have no idea what their background is, what their training program is, or what their, you know, their workout is for the day. But we just have this innate, you know, sense that we need to be in competition. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I had something really, like, I don't allow these things to affect me many times. And this is why I love this tip, because I have to eat, sleep, and live this own mantra myself, because, you know, I am a competitive person and I look at what's happened in my training and go, oh God, you know, why couldn't I break that, you know, 2.5 hours on that bike course? Or why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? And I recently had a really bad bout of illness, and I'm very, very lucky to be alive right now, you know, and that happened only 4 months ago.
Oh, wow.
And I just got back to running, and I've only done 3 runs. And when I say runs, I have to put inverted commas around it, because they're not really runs right now. They're little like light jogs where I'm walking, I'm briskly walking, and I'm running a little bit. And someone commented on social media going like, how far you've downfalled. And one, that makes you feel so insignificant, but it also is a true reflection on that person,
right,
as opposed to something you've done or the achievements that you've achieved. And there are so many different like parts of this sport that are amazing, but there's also that competitive side that can, unfortunately, almost feel toxic to some people.
Right.
And you focus on you and don't worry about what anyone else is thinking about you or what anyone else is doing. And you follow your own path, your own training, your own guidance. You know, speak to your coaches and your small group. You will be far more successful than allowing other outside influences to impact your training or your own personal journey.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I think another thing that's really important is one of the things that I love about triathlon is that it is a solo sport. Like, you are the only person that matters with what you're doing. You are doing your program. You're doing this for yourself. And yes, we can be competitive with other people, but ultimately we're in competition with ourselves. And I think that lends itself exactly to your tip, you know, you do you, boo.
You do you, boo.
Yeah.
There's this amazing, I don't know if you guys have seen him, and if you don't follow him on social media, I really recommend you do. His name is Chris Nitschik.
Oh yeah.
He is one of the very first Down syndrome men to compete at Ironman full distance. And he did Kona. And he has this like 1% rule, right? Mm-hmm. It's just be 1% better. And as long as you're 1% better and you're doing you and you're following your own path, you are going to succeed. Don't worry about anyone else.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.